The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
Now, clearly, November is the month of remembrance in a whole range of ways, but it's particularly sobering to realise that over a third of veterans believe that there aren't many opportunities for ex-servicemen and women to reunite, with one in 10 veterans reporting that they've never seen their fellow comrades since leaving the service. Now, to talk us through some of this findings and some of these issues, we're delighted to welcome former Strictly Come Dancing star, BBC presenter, and of course Marine veteran JJ Chalmers to the programme. How are you, JJ?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to connect with your good self, but were you surprised by these findings that actually, despite all the intentions when you say your final farewells and you leave the service, etc., actually reuniting with people you've actually literally spent in life-changing situations and life-challenging situations just doesn't seem to be taking place?
No, part of me is not surprised because I can understand some of the the nuance and the circumstances that sit behind it. And part of that comes from, you know, for example, when I served in the military, I live in Scotland, but I was based in Plymouth. And so geographically, I'm then sort of taken away from those that I used to see on a daily basis. And then in terms of, you know, employment beyond beyond service, well, actually, you know, there's huge positives in terms of, you know, most veterans go on to make a successful transition and therefore go on to have civilian employment. But what that means is life becomes busy and most people go on to start a family. And again, life becomes busy. And those are all great positives. But when you have lived through the unique circumstances that veterans so often have, and those are both the good experiences that we have, but of course there are negative experiences in there as well. Those relationships and bonds become more important than ever. And so, you know, you can have friends at home, you can have family, but actually, you know, having a connection with those that you went through the good and the bad with, without that, you can begin to feel lonely and isolated. And so that's where I think some of this comes from.
As the late John Lennon said, life is what happens to you whilst you're busy making other plans. Railcard, of course, carried out this research and, as we said, came up with the notion that one in 10 veterans have never seen their fellow comrades since leaving the armed forces. Is it a case of, well, you literally need to reach out and maybe take those steps to possibly coordinate and link up with them? Or would you say, well, no, is there certain people I would never want to see from Marines again?
Well, there might be one or two of those people, but ultimately there are so many people, you know, that I went through training with, went through recovery with, went served in operations, that I would do anything to sort of see. But yes, life gets in the way, as John Lennon sort of famously alluded to. And what it means is, how can we remove some of those barriers? And one of those barriers might be a financial barrier. And so Railcard has conducted this study in order to try and encourage people to sign up and get a veteran's Railcard, which will ensure you get a third off train travel. And actually, it costs you £30 up front. But for someone like me coming from Scotland down to the south of England, you've essentially paid for that in one journey. But it gives you a third off rail travel. It also gives rail travel a discount to your family, to your wife and to your children. And remember, they're an integral part of the armed forces community as well. And so it's trying to remove just one of those barriers that will allow people to make those physical connections with one another. Because, you know, I talk to some of my friends on a daily basis on, you know, whatever type form of social media it is, but it's not the same as being back in a room with them and it feeling like it was just yesterday that actually you were living together.
And this clearly actually is one way in which, despite the cost of living crisis and so on, costs can actually be kept down and manageable for not only the veterans, but their families as well, as you rightly say. Where can people actually go to find out details about getting this veteran rail card?
The simplest thing is to go to railcard.co.uk, and say the information is there in terms of not just the veteran card, but obviously how you can have your family come along on those trips with you as well.
JJ Chalmers, Royal Marine veteran and Strictly Come Dancing star, of course. Huge thanks. By the way, how do you feel the current package of Strictly people are actually coming on, JJ? Or is it a case of, no, once I've done it, I don't need to connect with it ever again?
No, it's a funny one. I don't watch the series in its entirety, but if because I follow all the social media things, the dances do pop up on my feed on social media. And because I sort of know what I'm looking at now, you can't help but look away and, you know, cast a little eye over it. But you also need to, I also need to remember like exactly how it felt to go through that. And so they're all doing extremely well because I know just how difficult and challenging it is. It is, it's an absolute mountain to climb, but yeah, they're all getting there.
Fantastic. Well, JJ, delight as ever. Take care and happy traveling, JJ.
Thank you.
Okay, well, the temperatures are beginning to drop and clearly we may well be considering what can we actually do in terms of heating costs and keeping warm this winter. Well, it seems that more than 10 million people in the UK can only afford to heat one room in their entire home this winter. So let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges that that actually entails with two fabulous folk. First of all, Gas Safe Registered Engineer Elizabeth Saxton. How are you, Elizabeth?
Yes, good morning. Fine, thank you.
Excellent. And we've also got Gas Safe Register Rob Denman. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent. Rob, if we can come to you first, I mean, tell us a little bit about some of the findings in terms of this particular aspect that you know, people are obviously really concerned about the likely increase in fuel costs and so on. And so they're just considering, well, we'll just work in one room this winter.
Absolutely, Alex. So, well, I think the cost of living crisis is hitting all of us, and really many households will be reevaluating their household budgets this winter. Our research is showing that 4.5 million Brits are potentially at risk from heating just one room in their house with a gas fire. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got a team of gas safe inspectors, and the latest data is showing that one in two gas fires inspected by our inspectors were found to be unsafe. So we're asking people to make gas safety a priority and get their gas fires checked by a gas safe engineer.
Like Elizabeth. So Elizabeth, let's come to your good self, if we may. Just talk us through why it's so important to actually get those gas appliances checked regularly to avoid things like carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yes, well, yeah, you've just said it then. Carbon monoxide poisoning, it can kill. So it's very important to get things checked annually. I've seen it quite a lot out there now that people are starting to use their fires more without them being checked. So, yeah, it's very important that that's done.
And what are the signs of unsafe gas appliances? I mean, if people are sort of saying, oh, well, I think it's okay, but, you know, what kind of are the warning signals that really need to be addressed immediately?
So on a fire itself, you can have a look yourself at the flames. If you think that they're not burning correctly, you know, lazy yellow flames instead of nice blue flames. And then also the signs of carbon monoxide poisoning. If you're experiencing headaches quite a lot, feeling sick, and you've had your fire on, I would definitely be getting, one, your fire checked, and you checked out as well. By a doctor.
Rob, as head of professional and field services at Gas Register, is this a bit like painting the fourth bridge, that basically you're forever actually having to check appliances and sort it out just as you finish one set, you carry on for the next set?
So every gas appliance needs to be checked every year annually, and that's to make sure you've got full confidence that it's working safely. This is a great time of year to do it. We're just going into the winter period. Gas appliances are going to be used more. You need full confidence it's going to, A, continue throughout the winter, and really importantly, that it's safe to be used. So now's the time to get it safety checked. Gas Safe Engineer, the easiest way to find a Gas Safe Engineer is to go to our website, gassaferegister.co.uk, or contact our team of customer service agents on 0800 408 5500. The average cost of a gas safety check, research shows, is about £60 to £90. So it's not too expensive. I appreciate people are on different budgets, but we would say make gas safety a priority this winter.
We talk obviously about making sure that your appliances are actually checked from that point of view. There are a few other tips that I think are worth noting in terms of how you're ensuring that health is maintained, including making sure that all rooms with gas appliances are properly ventilated.
Absolutely. So all gas appliances need fresh air to burn correctly. Gas fires in particular may have a ventilator in the room. At this time of year, people might be tempted to block it up. I know when I was out as an engineer similar to Liz, and Liz, you've probably seen this, where customers will put cling film over ventilators, or they'll put paper over it to stop that airflow, believing they're doing the right thing, you know, stopping drafts coming into a room and costing them more money. But the gas fire like any gas appliance, needs fresh air to come in so it can burn correctly, and that the flue system, the chimney, can pull the products of combustion away from the room.
You should also possibly consider fitting an audible carbon monoxide alarm. Is that in addition to the things Liz described earlier in terms of obviously lazy flames and so on?
Absolutely. So first line of defence will be to get your appliance safety checked by a gas safe engineer. Second line of defence, absolutely a carbon monoxide alarm in the room where the gas appliance is. I had a little look on the internet last night. I was a little bit out of touch with costs. They're ranging from about £15 for a battery operated one, right up to sort of £90 if you want it to be able to talk to your phone and send you alerts and so on. So that they'd be fitted on the wall, the ceiling, wherever the manufacturer's instructions say, a certain distance away from the gas appliance itself.
And also something which many people might not be aware of, the emergency control valve, knowing where that's basically located is important.
Absolutely. So if you've got any gas safety concerns, you need to know where your emergency control valve is. Now, this will be located next to your gas meter. So you need to know where your gas meter is, familiarise yourself where that location is, that you can get to it. It might be behind a box, a gas meter box. And next to the meter will be an emergency control valve and a direction label there telling you how to operate it, and a telephone number on who to contact.
And just a final reminder, Rob, in terms of people wanting to get their gas appliances checked, where should they go to find a gas safe registered engineer?
Our website, gassaferegistered.co.uk. Simply put your postcode in, the type of appliance you wish to have checked, and a list of locally qualified engineers will be appearing on the screen. Or you can contact our customer service team on 0800 408 5500.
Rob Denman, Head of Professional and Field Services at Gas Safe Register. And of course, Elizabeth Sexton, indeed Elizabeth Saxton, get the pronunciation correct there, a Gas Safe Registered engineer, of course. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on, folks.
Thank you,
Alex.
Well, I've often said that really we should be engaging with our inner bear and actually going to hibernation for the winter months. But it seems that that's actually pretty much what tends to happen, with 7 in 10 British folks saying that they plan to hibernate from now until March. This is according to the Zender Group UK. Indeed, over the next 13 weeks, it looks as though we're going to be spending 18 hours a week plonked on the sofa. That's 234 hours. We'll be drinking 130 cups of tea or coffee, having 13 duvet days, and probably watching 169 episodes of our favourite TV shows. But what about our house and our home when it comes to that? What about the environment we're actually living in? Well, we're delighted to actually explore this even further with air quality expert Stuart Smith. Stuart, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Yes, very good, Alex. Thanks for having us on.
Excellent. Well, I mean, these findings, I suppose ultimately people would turn around and say, yeah, well, that's what we do in Britain, basically. We like to sort of feel as though we're going to go out and party, but ultimately it's just best to stay at home.
Yeah, I mean, amazingly, the results came back that 59% of us cancel our social arrangements in the winter due to being cold and everything outside, and we prefer to stay indoors. So, yes, it's not a bad thing that we want to stay indoors. It's just thinking about what we create when we're indoors.
Yeah, and indeed, that's the key aspect, because as an air quality expert, you're best placed to provide some tips in terms of how to keep one's home healthy. I mean, presumably without necessarily keeping the windows open all of the time, which people might not be happy to do. You're looking at obviously avoiding extremes, I would have thought, and maintaining a consistent climate.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, the survey showed that people with illnesses in the winter, 66% said they had a sore throat, 59% stuffy nose, and 47% dry skin. This is all coming winter when we're spending a lot of time indoors. And you're quite right, it's the air quality indoors that affects some of us and can affect some of our health. So a great example is that an average family of four produces 24 pints of water a day. That's an amazing result, isn't it? When you think of 24 pints of water, that's the moisture that an average family will produce via cooking, cleaning, bathing and so forth. So where does that water go?
So all that carbon dioxide and all that condensation that's being produced as well.
Exactly. VOCs, PMs, everything.
Yes. So, I mean, is it all down to the ventilation then? I mean, do we actually need to ensure that our fans are updated, that if we have extractor fans, that maybe if they're over 10 years old, they might need replacing and so on?
Definitely. If you've got extractor fans in there, it's a great way of ventilating your property to take the moisture laden air out of the property. But if it's over 10 years old, just like anything, the ventilation systems of the technology's changed in 10 years. Now you can put ventilation systems in that can sense the humidity and can ramp the ventilation up and down. So using less energy, but taking away that human aspect of pulling a cord or switching a fan on. So that takes away, you know, it's a blind thing for the people. So it does help.
And maintenance, of course, I mean, it seems a no-brainer, but obviously ensuring that boilers and radiators are effectively well-serviced and bled if necessary, presumably.
Yeah, and a great test for radiators, just touch the top of the rad. If you've got a cold top and a warm bottom, you know, you could possibly say there's an airlock in there, so bleed your radiators to get the best efficiency. And of course, we're in the news, in the media, we're told, you know, keep your windows shut for winter, keep the heat in because cost of living. It's a different message, isn't it? You know, we were told to open our windows a few years ago, but opening windows does help with ventilation. So you haven't, if you haven't got extractor fans, I would say look at your trickle vents, keep your windows slightly ajar if you can, when you can, but keep a constant temperature in your property as well to keep that humidity down.
Yeah, so a fairly critical thing because obviously there are many people must possibly listen to this program who actually live in slightly older houses, no extractor fans and so on. So, you know, sometimes, like I say, just allowing air to circulate can be a useful way of hopefully addressing these issues.
Yeah, and if we look at the older houses were designed to leak. They were made leaky, air leaky houses. So you've got a natural bit of ventilation. But over the years, we've been not forced, but we've been educated to say insulate, make our houses airtight to keep that heat within the house. So, of course, the more you insulate, the more you're keeping that air in your house and what we call air soup. You know, you're mixing those VOCs, those PMs, but then the condensation appears. And this is where we start to see mold appear into the properties as well.
Were you surprised by any of the findings, Stuart?
I was surprised with the sickness side of things. Yes, I knew about the condensation, obviously. I understand about the mold, but the sickness side. And when you start looking at the reasons why people have dry skin in winter, that was really interesting to say that cold air, you know, your skin doesn't evaporates quicker in winter because the cold air can't hold the moisture. So that was really interesting. The dry skin thing that was that did shock me. And the one that was really alarming is 1 in 10 of us, when we see mold, we just paint over it. That was an alarming stat because that mold will just keep coming back and back because they're not addressing the cause.
Yeah, that's kind of like the equivalent to raising the carpet and actually just brushing the dust underneath the carpet and hopefully the pile doesn't get any bigger, isn't it, really?
100%, yeah. I mean, one of the good tips is what we always say is move your furniture around. So, and it's about ventilation again. So if you've got furniture that's pressed against the wall, you can't ventilate around the back of that furniture. So just move it now and again to let some air pass through.
Yeah, I was intrigued to see that 59% of us cancel social arrangements if it's too cold outside. I thought we were perhaps a little bit more hardy than that, but clearly...
Yeah, I'm one of those.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. And over 3/4 say the best thing about winter is not feeling the pressure to actually be outside doing things all the time. So questions, I suppose, from that point of view. Where can people go to find out further details, Stuart, about what we've been talking about in this particular survey especially?
Right. If they go to our website, which is Zehnder, ZEHNDER.co.uk, we've got an advice and help, some tips on there, and they can learn a bit more about how to ventilate their home or how to keep that moisture levels down.
And just out of interest, when you were at school, did you actually say, yes, what I want to be when I grow up, to your careers person, is an air quality expert?
Do you know what? I stumbled into it. No, I didn't. But the more I get involved with it, the more I keep delving further into it. And it's becoming a medical expert more than an air quality expert sometimes. But no, when I left school, I wanted to be a train driver like any other kid.
Ah, well, there we are. So it just goes to show the joys of life can take you in so many different ways, which is great stuff.
Indeed.
Stuart, it's been awesome connecting with the good stuff today. I'm sure I don't have to wish you a happy holiday season, but enjoy your hibernation period. Keep on keeping on, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the spring.
Thank you so much, Alex. Thank you.
Contact with sick people, time spent indoors, time since the summer holidays, time until the Christmas holidays, weather conditions, daylight hours, exercise or activity levels, and of course the half-term period are all factors that formulate part of the real world calculation in terms of what we are now referring to as Yellow Friday. I'll say that again, not Black Friday, Yellow Friday. Apparently the time in which it's the most likely day of the week for absence from school in general. And to actually talk us through some of the findings behind this, and how maybe to avoid Yellow Friday and address these issues. We're delighted to welcome two fabulous folk. First of all, media medic Dr. Ellie Cannon. How are you, Ellie?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, that's good to hear. And also nutritionist Adrian Benjamin. How are you, Adrian?
Yeah, I'm good too, thanks.
Excellent. Now, this survey about proven probiotics, Ellie. Is this a case of when you looked at it, you said, well, yeah, but most of this is kind of fairly self-evident, isn't it? That, you know, if you associate with people who are poorly, you're likely to get illnesses and so on. And if you're kind of generally low and your immune system is not functioning at its best, then you are likely to sort of spend time off school.
Yes, I think it's really good for people and particularly parents, though, to understand all these different factors that affect and support our children's health. So, of course, we know that being around other kids and the temperature dropping and those short, dark days that we've got now really sort of affect when children get ill. And I think it's really good to sort of understand why GPs like me see sort of this day in November as being so busy with coughs and colds and what parents can do about it.
Has this been exacerbated by the pandemic? I mean, were people's immune systems dropped then, or was it a case of no, those 2 years mild by comparison?
Well, I don't think it would have affected people's immune system at all, but I think what has happened, which we know for sure, is that kids who were toddlers or babies during the pandemic or even starting school at that time when it was remote, they haven't actually been susceptible to those sort of viruses because they haven't come into contact with them in those couple of years. So certainly parents are finding now, maybe sort of in 2023 and probably next year as well, that kids are sort of getting more coughs and colds just because they didn't get those specific viruses when they were younger.
Adrian, turning back to yourself again, of course, Yellow Friday, as with most things, has a specific day, i.e. the 10th of November, associated with it. You've looked at the mathematics of this side of things there. What are your thoughts on Yellow Friday? And you know, is that basically the math showing that that's the day when basically more children are likely to fall ill and be absent from school than any of the other 360 odd days of the year?
Yes, I was. We were looking at the day, the sort of the time of the year when children are most likely to fall sick, and we just started to look at the data. And basically, when we started to put the data into a sort of calculation, it came out with this day of the 10th of November for this year specifically. Basically, as you mentioned, we looked at the different factors that we thought were the most important, and it just identified this one particular day, which we thought was of interest and would be of interest to parents.
Mm. I mean, presumably the day can change. Is it a movable feast? Can we be going on to Yellow Tuesday in years to come, or Yellow Wednesday?
Well, I think it's a Friday for a specific reason. I mean, Friday is the day of the week generally when there is the most absence from school. So when you look at a Friday, I mean, it's a Friday, and then it's you've got Wednesday as the lowest day of the week for absence, and then Monday as the sort of second highest behind Friday. So it's probably always going to be a Friday, and which is why we coined the term Yellow Friday. So I think that's quite a sort of heavy indication, the day of the week. That's sort of the factor that we put as the first factor. And then we worked everything else sort of from there.
Ellie, prevention, presumably always better than cure. Would your advice be stock up on vitamin C, wear hazmat suits? Where would you recommend people should go?
Yeah, maybe not the hazmat suits. I think we had enough of that during the pandemic. Well, I mean, certainly we know from the clinical study by Proven that the introduction of a probiotic with vitamin C can help coughs and cold symptoms in children. And I always advise parents to make sure their children are sleeping well, make sure they're eating well. We know that exercise is good for the immune system. So any of those things that we can help our kids do will really be valuable.
I was intrigued in terms of how time comes into this equation, Adrian. Time spent indoors, time since the summer holidays, time until the Christmas holidays. Is that just a case of how likely children are to be in contact with other carriers or people who are suffering illness?
I think it's more about sort of mental, their mental situation. So spending a lot of time indoors obviously means you're not spend they're not spending time outdoors, so they're not actually getting the fresh air, getting time outside in the light, in the sunlight. And then the time since the holidays or until the Christmas holidays just means it's more of a sort of mental thing where it's like they know that they have school for the next however long, and there's a long wait until Christmas, and the summer holidays are kind of far behind them, so a distant memory. So that's more of an emotional type influence, I think, on their well-being.
Makes sense. Dr. Ellie, presumably when you were at school, you never actually had a day's absence. I can't imagine you sort of being poorly in any way, shape, or form. You'd be on top form Monday through Friday.
Well, also, I'm the child of a doctor, and any children of doctors will tell you that if you say you don't feel well, they just say, "Oh, don't worry about it, go to school." So I think you're right. I don't think I had any days off,
This
actually.
is it. You see, Adrian, you haven't actually incorporated that into the equation. I don't see sort of you children of medics being put into line there. Maybe it's a possible flaw in the calculus, but what the hey. Adrian, if people want to find out more about this particular area, including looking at the equation, which, as I say, incorporates a fair number of interesting facts, where would you point them?
Yeah, they can go to the Proven website, which is provenprobiotics.co.uk, and they can find all the information there.
Adrian Benjamin, nutritionist, and Dr. Ellie Cannon, media medic and 100% attendee of all education scenarios. Huge thanks. Take care and be well.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Ellie Cannon, of course, for updating us on Yellow Friday. Yellow Friday, of course, the time in November where most school absentees are likely to occur, or indeed absences, because children are going to be poorly. And appropriately, Natasha Wanton is actually wearing yellow, even though she's in Australia at present for this latest scenario. Not that it's a Friday either, because depending on when you're listening to this, if you're listening live, of course, on Siren Radio, you're listening to it on a Thursday morning. If you're listening to it via a podcast, it's up to you when you listen to it. Natasha, welcome. How's life in Australia?
Thank you. Good. It's very interesting that you said that because there is a lot of sickness going around out here at the minute. There's the flu has been particularly nasty, and we've got another round of COVID going around. So, Yellow Friday. Yep, that makes sense to us.
Yeah. Maybe we should have a lockdown. I know, maybe not. Thanks also to JJ Chalmers, of course, from Strictly, who obviously has a whole heap of other experiences, and of course brought us around to the whole notion of how if you are a member of the armed service, if you are a veteran, you can benefit, and your family can benefit from a relatively inexpensive railway travel as well. Rail cards are useful. Fia van den Bogaert, in Balk in the Netherlands, how is life with you these days?
Well, I mean, this past week was tough because there was only rain, but for the first time this week there is sun, so I'm gonna go outside after this. So it's, yeah,
Well,
looking better.
good news for you, of course. It's always looking better, especially when Sarah Huntley arrives. But apparently, Storm Debbie will be on her way. So that'll be another storm for us as we experience the whole joys of autumnal life. Sarah Huntley, are you experiencing the joys of autumnal life?
I am indeed, which is partly why I couldn't join you all last week because of storm, whatever it was. But
Kieran,
storm.
last week. It was
Yeah.
Kieran last week, Debbie this week.
Debbie sounds quite cute. Debbie doesn't sound like she's going to do much damage, hopefully, does she? If she's a Debbie.
Oh, I don't know. I've known a few who in their time have actually had their ways forward, but still, that's another
Ooh.
line for another time entirely.
That's more, Alex.
Yeah, oh, not on
No.
this road, not on this broadcast. We also have, of course, with us, even though he's changed a few things around, because once again, he's succumbed to the will of the majority, who would say that yes, that's the reason he's actually taken out cry freedom, because he's been got at, he's been censored. He's decided to actually approach it from a different line entirely. And tragically, he's not going to be doing the Marvels either, as far as I'm aware. So, Natasha, you know, once again, we won't know what we are going to make about this trailer for the Young Avengers, a whole new experience in Kevin Feige land, which also features Kamala Khan, as indeed an homage at the end of the Marvel scenario to the Iron Man world, basically, and the original Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury connections. Not a spoiler, it's just a general sort of pointer that things work in there. Because as people know, I don't do spoilers, especially when we actually can coordinate with the whole notion of a dream scenario, And you actually have a flatulence joke, which basically leads to people missing the next line because, according to Nicolas Cage, it's so amusing. Well, Richard, I mean, if you've decided to actually deal with flatulence jokes now, clearly we're in a whole new world. Over to you, please.
Well, we are indeed a world of dreams. I put it to you, Alex, that if just suddenly, without you doing anything about it at all, I mean, you are, as Nicolas Cage plays in this film, Paul Matthews, he's an academic, a very, very reasonable character. I mean, the way the character's created, he's a biologist. He's wants to write a book about biology, although he hasn't begun it. He's aging a bit. Slightly balding, a bit uncharismatic, a very genial family man. He seems happily married, has two children, and suddenly other people start dreaming about him. Indeed, he appears in their dreams, and he's done absolutely nothing to merit it one way or the other. It's just the way people respond. Now, this film has some very, very interesting aspects to it about celebrity and about cancel culture, because initially, when these extraordinary things happen, he discovers his class, for example. I mean, he's appeared in their dreams. He seems a little upset, you see, because his appearances are entirely passive to begin with. The thing is, he's a passive, amiable individual, like your good self, Alex Fuller, a genial, kindly person. But he's enraged when another character wants to write what he has initially decided he chooses his topic. But that's all. His persona in the dreams alters to the extent where his class, almost all his class, won't go anywhere near him. They're not in a safe space with someone as aggressive as that. He discovers there's a definite downside when an intruder with a knife appears in his kitchen wanting to kill him. Indeed, his wife decides, initially she's perfectly at ease with the celebrity that he gets and is delighted to get. Indeed, he seizes his opportunity to launch his book. The PR agency see it as an opportunity to promote all sorts of aspects of things they could think up or others could think up linked to him, which aren't necessarily flattering. But he's a person of integrity there, you see. He doesn't want that. But what he wants is secondary to what happens. Nobody wants to know him. He goes to a restaurant and he finds that people recognize him and they won't eat whilst he's there. And indeed, when he attempts to defy what he sees as totally unreasonable, after all, he is an innocent party. He wants to see his daughter in a school play. What happens there? And what indeed is happening when, there is an assistant in the public relations agency who takes a shine to him. After all, he appears in erotic dreams and things go a little far. You referred to a flatulence joke. I have to say, the audience roared with laughter. It is a funny film, but it is thought-provoking. It asks, what happens if you embrace celebrity and indeed people start making films about you, having interviews with you? You're flattered. Then it all goes terribly wrong, but it's not your fault. You are, in fact, incidental to it, except that you can appear strangling someone, and naturally they don't want to be anywhere near you, and indeed his class desert him. We won't dwell on, as we don't do spoilers, Alex, I'm glad to hear it. We won't dwell on what actually happens, but you do see it. Not only does the profile of an individual implode through no fault of their own, you could argue it's no fault of their own that they become a celebrity. But of course, this is saying a great deal about celebrity culture, but also about cancel culture when, in fact, the world turns against him. And this could involve deeply cruel personal problems, too. It's wickedly funny. I did enjoy it. It does stretch the joke a little. It is a little overlong, yes. 100 minutes could have done with a bit of pruning, with the number of examples of the jokes and so forth. But it's edited well. It doesn't dwell on certain dreams, which indeed would have been rather frightening to. You can see why people are decidedly alarmed. What happens quite literally if someone invades your space? How do you respond to them? And is it their fault? No, of course it isn't their fault. But nonetheless, you see them and, well, they've been doing all sorts of strange things to you only a few hours earlier. So I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I saw it last night. And I have to say that I think most people have. You could argue it pushes its theme perhaps a bit too far, and I would go along with that. But equally, Nicolas Cage is an extremely fine actor given the right roles, and he gives a very good performance. He has got a comic flair. He's balding a bit, and I have to say that I don't think it was a very convincing piece of makeup or hair, the way that was handled. There are flaws in it, but let's not dwell on the flaws. Let's dwell on a thought-provoking experience.
The kind of movie you'd probably like if you like being John Malkovich. If you didn't like being John Malkovich, probably you wouldn't like it. That's Spike Jones. Maybe, of course, we all want to secretly be Suella Braverman. But still, that's a Home Secretary for you. Now, she is a scary person. Sarah Huntley, is this one for you?
Well, strangely enough, I'm in good company, Fitzwilliams. I went to see it last night too in Wimbledon. I'd say what I found slightly alarming, I think it's a really good film, but you're laughing one minute and screaming the next. And the farting scene is so embarrassing. It's cripplingly embarrassing. I'll say no more. It's almost like you want to be watching it on your own without somebody else sitting next to you because you're thinking, oh, Lord, you're embarrassed for him. Richard, you back me up there on that.
Oh, I absolutely yeah. Well, I do have to admit, by the way, I roared with laughter, and there was someone in the audience who couldn't stop laughing. So
no,
well, just as long as they couldn't stop farting, I
think.
It wouldn't
apply to the lovely girls, but it would probably apply to people of our age group. You think, oh Lord, if you were in that situation, that was the last thing you'd want to do. But anyway, because it was very funny. I think you summed it up incredibly well, Richard. It's horrible in the way that how the culture of dropping people and, you know, making everybody brilliant one minute and then dropping them the next through nothing you've done. I think that got that brilliantly. And also, you'd have laughed at this, Alex, when you see it. There's a scene right at the beginning where they're showing him doing a lecture to his students who are so disengaged, it's ridiculous. Which made
doesn't
me
sound like one of my lectures, doesn't it, Natasha?
I'm so sorry. Well, it is like one of mine, where you're thinking, what else do I have to do to engage? You know, so you
Monty Python.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Try Monty Python. It worked for Alex.
So that drew you in. And it's really very disturbing, some of the dream sequences, particularly with all that's going on with the two wars. That was absolutely horrific. And then you're thinking, please let that be a dream. Don't let that be real. The other thing I really, really, really liked about this film, and this is probably a bit narcissist of me, but I was so pleased to see actors of my age group acting with wrinkles, with crow's feet, with slightly wobbly chins. I loved it. I thought it was true casting. And Nicolas Cage, yeah, he does have a monk's balding patch bit. In a way, maybe, Richard, they deliberately did that to make the hair look like a balding monk business. Because I was thinking, could I fancy Nicolas Cage?
Look what happens, Sarah, when you do. And indeed, if he appears in an erotic dream, I want to give
Richard enough already. Thank you. Yeah, Francis Ford Coppola, obviously his nephew, has got his own challenges with life.
But Richard and I cannot, we won't give any more away, but it does put you in a hilariously awkward place for him. Say no more. And it wouldn't have been my first choice to go and see, but I'm very pleased I did.
Absolutely, and directed by Christopher Morchi, by the way, must get credit for it. Very good cast, excellent cast.
Natasha, is this something which Australia could deal with, or is it a case of, in Australia, we don't even know what flatulence is?
Oh, I think a good body humour joke would go down probably very well here. It doesn't take a lot to get a party started out here, and take that as you leave it. I think this sounds like a really interesting novel kind of movie that's got a really unique idea, and it's really drawn me in by both trailer and what people have said about it. Isn't it really nice to get something that's unique in a time when we're seeing them remaking Mean Girls, which has just dropped the trailer for, which is horrendous, by the way, the trailer.
Natasha, you'll be saying you're against the Marvels with Brie Larson next.
Let's not get started on my opinions of Brie Larson. I think this sounds like a really interesting movie, and I am very keen to see it. And I think that it will appeal to a lot of people because of just the novelty of the concept.
And Fear, clearly from Bulk, a movie you may not be familiar with in any way, shape or form from that point of view, because I wasn't aware that Richard was going to drop this on us until literally a few hours this morning. Anyway, what's your thought on this particular one? Or is it rather like one of those silent but deadly expulsions of air that can create no end of bowel problems?
Well, I don't know, actually. I mean, I have mixed feelings right now because I'm not sure if I want to watch it, because apparently it's awkward, but it's also very funny. And I should also watch it alone, but it's also funny to see it with other people. So I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah, it's like together they've done the ultimate paradox, haven't they? You go and see it alone. No, you don't. You see it by other people. No, you see it alone. It's where do you go? It's terrible, you know?
But so what... I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, that probably makes a kind of sense after all manner of routines. Let's move on, Richard, to your next selection.
Before we do, Alex.
Yes.
Before we do, what were the scores, Sarah and Richard? What were the scores?
Well, I would go because it is so, it's pretty unique. I've never seen anything quite like it. And it has a comic side that still, you know, one can laugh. I would go to 8 on this. I think it's a little bit too long, but it was very enjoyable. It shows what a cruel world we're in.
Yeah, I definitely think I agree with Richard. Definitely an 8.
There you are. Kind of thought it was going to be an 8. Anatomy of a Fall. Sandra Hüller, a compelling role, and of course a bracing and chilly high-mindedness. I see what they did there. Chilly high-mindedness. Well, it will be chilly if you're actually up that with that sort of level of snow and other factors. But why, Richard, is this a Palme d'Or winner?
Well, the reason, Alex, it becomes clear when you watch it, it's 2.5 hours. So if it grips you, it has to grip you in a way that you will not forget. And it does, directed by Justine Triet, who was co-writer. And it's set, indeed, it's snowy. It's in a Grenoble chalet. And Sandra Voiter, played by Sandra Hüller, an extremely fine actress, initially, we meet her when she's interviewing a rather attractive female student. It turns out that she is or has had lesbian relationships before, a matter of some significance. Everything in this film is, every detail you're given is significant in some way, and it's very frequently ambiguous, and that is the film's strength. It is very curious that whilst this interview is going on, and you're completely thrown by this, then full blast music is coming from upstairs. What on earth is this about? Why? Well, we do see and indeed learn why. Her husband, Daniel, is in fact playing full music, full blast. Now, that is extremely curious. Obviously, he wants to disrupt this interview. Their partially sighted son goes for a walk with his guide dog, Snoop, and finds his father, Samuel, dead outside the chalet from a head wound. Now, how has this happened? Because this is a movie, the anatomy of the fall is the anatomy of looking in detail as to what did or didn't happen or might have happened when he jumped or was pushed out of the top story room. It's extremely well acted, and Daniel, their son, is played by Milo Machado Grana, which I have to say, a really, really amazing performance. The police are involved because there is a lot of suspicion. His head wound may have been inflicted before his body hits the ground. Now, she has a friend and lawyer, Vincent Renyi, who's played by Swan Ireland, and he thinks it's very likely suicide, but it's very difficult to prove it either way. And as this film develops, we learn more and more about what's actually been going on that the day before, and she hasn't mentioned this, that they had a really violent row. And indeed, at a previous occasion, she claimed that he'd attempted to overdose on aspirin. And indeed, we know from the row that he was going through a period of depression. He was felt guilty that the accident that occurred, which meant that Daniel was partially sighted, happened on his watch. Also, his career's not been going well. Now, you could argue that that is certainly a reason whereby he might wish to jump. But when it turns out that the fall is an extremely unusual one, we have an expert, it goes to court, there's a jump of a year, and we have an expert saying what could have happened, and then we have another expert contradicting them. This is symbolic very much of what's going on in this film, because everything we learn something that could possibly shed doubt on what the veracity of what we actually know. After all, Samuel is dead, and we know that Sandra is putting up, with the aid of a lawyer, a very, very good fight to make sure she's acquitted, because she's accused of being a murderer. So it's the way this film is edited. It's the drama. It's the way we see in flashback what was happening with her marriage when the tape of the argument is... Her husband used to sometimes tape their conversations. She never mentioned to her lawyer that there'd been a ferocious row. And then she's got a bruise. How did that happen? And so on. So the pattern in this film is to cast a certain amount of doubt on almost everything that we hear. It's perfectly obvious. Some might think that what happens climactically could have been foretold. But do you agree with it? What do you think? What actually happened? Indeed, it's a portrait of a marriage. It's a movie about ambition. It's also about how you can be cruelly caught in a sort of the spider's web of the law and facts. But what is a fact? It's very, very well done. The acting is perfection. The directing is superb. It's an unusual film, just as the first one was pretty unique. Well, you often have courtroom thrillers, but the reason it won at Cannes is the excellence of the performance and the fact it is so gripping for a very long time, 2.5 hours, which I have to say, it went in the most amazing speed. I really was impressed by this film, and I can see why that it did so well.
Time is just an illusion, and the fact that it's 50 minutes longer than Dream Sequence is irrelevant, surely. Fia van den Bogart, is this one for you? I suspect Richie's going to go for a 9 for this, by the way.
I totally have to agree. I actually already watched this movie, and I think it's such an amazing movie. And step by step, you learn more about the characters and how they're also flawed, and about the fight, of course. And it's just so interesting, and also to follow the court case. And I love that. I was actually very. I wanted to ask you, Richard, what did you think of the ending? Did it give enough?
I thought I was. I think it was more or less perfection. I do think the ending, as I've been saying all along without giving any spoilers, I hope, that there are and still remain in my mind question marks. I mean, about, for example, the issue dealing with the aspirin and how that comes to be part of the film. I mean, could, for example, she have attempted to poison her husband? I don't believe so, and I believe I think the ending was satisfactory. And indeed, you could argue, and especially these days, again, without giving an obvious spoiler, that was what I thought was probably going to happen all along, but it doesn't mean that it was what should have happened. And there's sufficient light and shade in this movie to make it fascinating throughout, especially when, for example, young Daniel's evidence is considered.
Fia, I hope this isn't a how-to guide to get rid of your spouse, because obviously we wouldn't want to endorse that as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is actually concerned. But what the heck. Fia, what would your score be?
I would have to agree. Definitely a 9. It's a great film.
Yeah, I mean, Richard hasn't said he's giving it a 9. I'm just putting words in his mouth.
I haven't. I'd give it 10.
Oh. Sarah Huntley, one for you? Or perhaps not?
Well, it didn't sound like it was for me, but if Theo's given it a 9 and Richard's given it a 10, it has to be a yes.
And Natasha?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting really good high marks, so it sounds like it's the winner. I am somewhat concerned about the conversation that's taken place about the ending, because I'm one of those people that if I don't find the ending satisfying, it can ruin the whole movie. Richard says he thinks it's satisfying, so hopefully I will agree. But yes, it definitely feels like one that I'm going to have a lot of fun kind of puzzling over as it's unfolding.
Mm. Meanwhile, Natasha, have you actually encountered Phoebe Dickinson at all?
Phoebe Dickinson, do enlighten me.
Oh, Fia, have you heard of Phoebe Dickinson?
No.
No. Sarah Huntley, have you heard of Phoebe Dickinson?
No, you've got us all. So
clearly, we need to have the Phoebe Dickinson publicist on the case. Richard, talk to us about Phoebe Dickinson and Jermyn Street and places.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Alex. It's a marvellous exhibition. I've been promoting it now for some time. And from the 8th to the 23rd November, so anyone in London can pop into the Dickinson Gallery at 58 Jermyn Street. There are some 60 paintings, mostly executed over the last 18 months. It's an exhibition called Great Houses and Gardens of England. And there's some of Britain's most iconic stately homes. And there are portraits, there are interiors, there are gardens. Phoebe is an artist who's inspired by Singer Sargent, and there are several conversation pieces. And the theme in this, you look at the country house very often, the interior, the gardens, or indeed the inhabitants, and you show the way, it shows the way that basically, these houses, which, remember, they're part of the fabric of our nation, and people, everyone's heard, say, of Castle Howard, Beaver Castle, and so on. And it shows the way that over time, each generation adds something new. And she's captured this brilliantly. I think I've really, really enjoyed promoting this, and indeed Country Life have just done a 5-page spread looking at the tradition of how country home houses have been painted, the Turner, Constable, Piper and others, and it's really been, it was a joy. There were two preview parties. One of them was on the day of the opening of Parliament, and there were some very distinguished figures there. And it really has been inspiring to see the way that the works have been hung. And I understand that the gallery, I'm seeing this shortly, has just been refurbished in the form of a country house. So it really will be atmospheric. It certainly was when it opened. And some of these works were, there were several that I recognised, having promoted the Royal Society of Portrait Painters exhibition, including one, a particular favourite of mine, Lady Rose Chumley of Houghton Hall. So this exhibition, if anyone is passing 58 Jermyn Street, really, really is worth seeing.
And I'm so pleased you actually pronounced Beaver Castle correctly as opposed to Belvoir Castle, which is easily mistaken. Last time I was in Jermyn Street, I think might have been to see Jeremy Conway when he was in agency there, although it might have also been when I was actually connected with getting a riding helmet made for myself. But that's another line entirely. So that's it then. Natasha Wanton, Fia van den Bogert, Sarah Huntley, Richard Fitzwilliams. We wrap up with the final sequence, of course, after engaging with the notion of this might all have been a dream, in which case somebody's going to break wind any moment now. So we'll say happy trails and keep watching those movies.
Why does the zebra look the way it does?
So embarrassing.
Hey, focus.
Is this how it went?
No, it's different now. Paul, you've been on my mind recently.
Yeah?
You just keep popping up in my dreams. You don't do anything, you're just there.
So, this specific person,
the remarkable nobody.
I'm also gonna have that experience.
Do you have a picture?
Have you been dreaming about me?
Have I been dreaming about you?
Yeah. There's like 100 messages. Somebody wants to interview me.
Well, this is strange. Maybe you should take a minute and think before you do anything drastic.
Why me? I don't know. I'm special, I guess.
How does it feel to go viral?
Who's actually had a dream about me?
You're scaring me, Pearl. I'm going to have nightmares.
I wish I was the one people were dreaming about.
Me too.
Yeah. No, it's something.
How's he dealing with all this?
We're not even the type of people that like attention, you know?
Do you think other people are seeing you naked?
Maybe thousands.
Oh.
I hope I'm behaving through your dreams.
Oh, no, you're not.
So I'm finally cool, huh?
I didn't say that.
You hear that, Janet? She's saying I'm a cool dad. Oh,
I really feel like you're playing with fire here.
Dad, please help me!
I'm not actually doing anything to them.
You know, fame can come with some less desirable side effects. You should be prepared for that.
Maybe we should cool this thing off.
What? What do you mean?
It's embarrassing.
Which part?
I guess I'll see you in my dreams.
Yeah. So of course not.